The recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Next Generation GTLD Registration Directory Services to Replace Who Is Call on Tuesday, the 14th of February, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call, as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And again, Daniel, we have you noted. Hearing no further.
Daniel?
Daniel is here.
Gotcha, Daniel.
Thank you. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to you, Chuck. Please begin.
Thanks, Terry, and welcome everyone to our call today. I think it'll be an interesting one and hopefully a productive one too. Does anyone have an update to their statement of interest? Okay. Not seeing anyone or hearing anyone, let's go on to the main part of our agenda, starting with agenda item 2. And in preface to that, I want to make a couple comments. First of all, I've appreciated the live, active discussion that's been going on the list. I especially appreciate some new people that we haven't seen saying much joining in. You're very welcome, and some good points have been made. And it's good that more people are getting active, and I think hopefully we'll see that as a continuing thing as we're really getting into the nitty-gritty of our work. Now, I want to remind everyone that, you know, we can only cover so much at a time and be effective. Right now, we are focusing on data protection and privacy. That doesn't mean that we're giving priority just to that area to the exclusion of other areas like rights protection and law enforcement and so forth. So please be patient with us. What we're doing shouldn't be looked at as just focusing on one area at the exclusion of others, but look at it as a task that we're doing right now to improve all of our understandings of this particular area. It's very important that we have as good an understanding as a group about data protection and privacy regulations in different jurisdictions, just like it will be that we understand the needs of rights holders, of law enforcement, and so forth. So please don't assume that we've made any final decisions on what we're going to do. A lot of you have been talking about things that are a little ahead of the game, and that's okay. Most of you recognize that we're going to get to those issues as we move forward. Right now, we're focusing on thin data, and we'll get beyond thin data hopefully in the next few weeks or month or so. So bear with us and understand that what we're doing right now is, and right up into Copenhagen and shortly thereafter, we want to get as good an understanding of data protection requirements as we can, because that will help us come to solutions that address those requirements while at the same time addressing other needs that sometimes come in conflict, often come in conflict with some of these requirements. So bear with us and certainly use opportunities like today to bring up your points as related to our particular topics, and especially ask questions that help us all get more clarity on the challenges in front of us. So I'll stop with that, and let's go ahead and bring up the slides for today's meeting. And I'm gonna we're gonna start off with a slide from the presentation that Stephanie Perrin prepared for last week, but she didn't give it because Peter gave some slides. So you'll notice this is a we pulled one slide out of Stephanie's presentation that she had prepared that I thought was a pretty good transition from our discussion last week when Peter gave a presentation and Peter and Stephanie discussed with the rest of you on the call some of the things with regard to privacy, or data protection in particular. Notice the two bullets here. One of the things that we're focusing on right now is the purpose limitation, in particular in European data protection law, but I think it applies in some other jurisdictions as well. And the first bullet, you can see it there, a broad interpretation of the purpose of collection, use, and disclosure allows subsequent reuse for different reasons. Now, that's not that's just a comment from Stephanie in the sense that, in other words, if you interpret data protection requirements very broadly, you would allow it to you would be allowed to collect, use, and disclose, you know, a broader set of data. Obviously, a narrow interpretation would do just the opposite. We haven't decided yet, but we'll have to decide exactly what data elements would be collected, what data elements would be used and disclosed, and we're mainly focusing on collection right now. The second bullet, purpose limitation, and Peter and Stephanie talked about this last week. Purpose limitation is the first premise of data protection analysis, and the purpose must be narrow and proportionate. How narrow? We're going to have to decide, okay? And some of you are legitimately concerned about too narrow a definition there. Others are concerned about too broad a definition. So the purpose of this slide is just to kind of bring us back or transition from what we talked about last week. And as hopefully all of you know, we didn't finish last week on this area, so we're continuing that. And what the leadership team decided to do was to go over some examples from Peter and to have Q&A on those examples after each one, and then we'll move on from there. But let's go ahead and go to slide two. And I'll turn it over to Peter.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope you are not too much bored about my presentations. This time I would like to to have it a more pragmatic way. I mean, in giving you more life examples and from outside of ICANN environment that we have been come across or some court cases was about especially in Europe. But as always, I try to have and to prepare myself to this presentation in looking at a global picture. As I keep repeating, privacy is a human right which is globally recognized. we have different legislation in this. We have, for the moment, one international legal instrument for this, but we have different privacy frameworks or international international instruments, I would say, which are not legally binding. However, it can guide us through about the implementation. For today's presentation, I would like to speak about the, as Chuck said, the very fundamental principle of purpose limitation or purpose specification. And for this, I have chosen the language, and it's only because of the language, let's put it like this, and because, of course, I'm representing Council of Europe, and the Convention 108 is the, till date, is the only international legal instrument on data protection and privacy, which is widely recognized in the world. However, as I said, it's not the only framework, the only binding one, but of course not the exclusive one. However, it has a very and more importantly, the modernized version of the Convention 108 has a very self-explaining language about purpose limitations. So, and the main principle. So I put it this on the slides, but before this, as a proof of what I have just said, I will again start referring back to the APEC privacy framework, which under the third chapter we have the principle of collection limitation. And in this text it says that the personal information should be limited, the collection of the personal information should be limited to information that is relevant to the purpose of collection, and any such information should be obtained by lawful and fair means and where appropriate with notice to or consent of the individual concerned. So here you can already see the identical languages that those two texts uses, but here I will jump to the modernized convention's text, which says that the data processing shall be proportionate in relation to the legitimate purpose pursued. And I will stop here a little bit because this is the core essence, I would say, of the purpose limitation principle. So when we are processing data, it has to be proportionate to the legitimate aim or the legitimate purpose pursued. And what is the legitimate purpose? That we have to define it in advance. I don't want to repeat, but what I have said during the last week's presentation, you will find a set of principles on the slides, and I have underlined some of the most important ones as the lawful processing. And the second under the second point, the free, specific, informed, and ambiguous consent, and so on and so forth. But very pragmatic, I would say that to process the data, you have to define your purpose for what you are processing it, and this has to be proportionate. I mean, your action, the data processing has to be proportionate to this purpose. pursued. So with this, I will go to the practical example. Of course, we can go back to the principles, but I think we have already said a lot of things about those and the practical implementation of those principles. And now I will like to turn to the examples for purpose specification. And these are for all of them are real life examples, and which are coming outside of the ICANN environment. But these are not innocent examples, because it can be in my sense related. We can relate them to ICANN's work and ICANN activities. So to start with the first one, I would like to. This is a very famous one. I mean, in data protection community, when the retail company and consumers' health conditions. So it happened somewhere. Sometimes I don't want to be very specific in that, because it doesn't matter, but it happens that actually in Europe. So it was one company who processed one consumer personal data under a contract of a loyalty card. So this consumer had a loyalty card, and when he bought articles in this in the retail market or in the store, she used the card, and the company used the data for a better service to assess better what kind of articles this consumer is looking for, but this company also used a kind of analytics in its processing method. So with using this big data analytics, they found out that their consumer is pregnant. So they called up the given number for telemarketing purposes, and to have a direct offer of diapers, which of course was offered to her for a very competitive price. But unfortunately, it was not her who picked up the phone, but her father, who was not at all aware about her daughter's situation and her daughter's pregnancy. And it was during the call, the retail company who revealed this, and the whole conversation went very bad. So you can see that to be pregnant, it's not a marketable thing anymore, or it's not. Maybe it's related to personal data, and you can find out, because there are a lot of tools, a lot of possibilities now to find out and find out a lot about consumers' health or other type of situation. But this retail company cannot have or doesn't have a purpose for health condition. I mean, for the data was not processed by this retail company for medical reason, because a retail company cannot process of course, I'm exaggerating and I'm simply oversimplifying, but let's put it like this bluntly, that a commercial company will not be able to process data for healthcare reason, or they can process under very strict conditions. With this, let's move to the second example, the personal data collected by drones. So drones are very fun things. It was like they was just hitting the sales in most of European countries. It's really and not only in European countries, but I think across the world, it's really on rise. However, there are also we found out that there are also some privacy and data protection consideration when you are using drones. And actually, it happened to me when I was in vacation with my family, and suddenly on the beach, and suddenly a drone appeared above me, and not only above me, but above 100 of person, and we know, and it was obvious that it was making recordings. So that, again, an example where you have privacy concerns that needs to be taken into account in advance, and you have to be very specific with your purpose, limitation or purpose of processing purpose of processing personal data, and the person and the data subjects of which you want to process the personal data. Because with drones, and I explicitly use this example because with drones you can very very easily process personal data of person who are not aware about the data processing, and maybe you are also not. I mean, you don't want to that kind of processing, but once it occurs, it breaches most of the privacy legislation. Let's put it like this. We have a very interesting case at the court. Because what's happening, if I'm alone, and also I saw this kind of videos as well on the net, and they are splendid, and it's really beautiful, but when you're... Oh, something is happening.
Everyone, please make sure your phone is on
something
mute.
Something happening.
Except for Peter.
Hello?
And
sure
this is Terry. And this is Terry. We're trying to isolate the line.
Thank you, Terry.
Oh, all right. Okay. Maybe I was saying something stupid. All right. So this video when the people when a couple is on the beach and they are filming each other, that's perfectly fine. No, anybody else. Or nobody else is on the beach, and they can use new technology, they can have fun of it, and that's fine. But if we are on the street and they are doing the same thing, I mean, it inevitably they will start recording other people because you are on the street, and this is why a court in a court case, the European Court of Justice said that it was a journalist case. The journalist went outside in the street and started filming. It was not with a drone, but it was started filming in a public space. And they said and it was contested. In counter argument, the journalist said that it's for his own purpose. And he will never go on public with this. But the court said that on the street you have to have the expectations that you will not be filmed and you will not be your image will not be captured without your notification, without being informed, without a specific purpose that if you allow, if you are processing personal data, and it is in public space, you have to follow data protection regulations, even if it's for your or for own use. That was quite revolutionary. It was very contested later on, but still, it's a good example to show you how the purpose specification is important in a real life situation. Let's move on to the purpose and the public authorities. And purpose specification for public authorities, because public authorities, of course, are processing personal data, and for them also, it is very, very relevant and of course mandatory in most of the jurisdiction to have a purpose specification. A very common, and to understand why it is important. Law enforcement, and we are saying in general terms, law enforcement, police, or national security agencies. But if you are looking at the legislation, they gave birth to those bodies or to those organizations, it was for a reason. And the data processing has to be in relation with those reason why they was constructed. So, for instance, an immigration authority, a body who is responsible for immigration, was not created for fight against crime. It was created because of immigration purposes. So it's a very common mistake, I would say it like this, and a very common concern from people that their immigration data will be used for law enforcement purposes as well, which is not possible according to privacy legislation, because the purpose will be not the same. There are some conditions under which certain data, in certain cases, or some investigation, it can be used. But for this, you have again a case by case purpose specification, and I will finish by the Digital Ireland and the Tele2 cases, because I think it's relevant. You know, it's not a Council of Europe and the Court of Human Rights cases. It's a court of the European Union pronounced the judgment on these cases, but it's very relevant, I think, in ICANN context as well. We had in Europe, in the European Union, a directive which has foreseen the retention of electronic communication data, but only, not the content, hopefully, but the metadata and the communication data, and this case was contested before the court, and the court said that this practice is infringing right to privacy and to the protection of personal data. It said that it has, and I spoke already about this, during the last week's call, it represents an interference with the fundamental right. And the interference if it's there, it has to be balanced. And the courts found out that the balance was not right because there was no subjective criterion under which this data was retained. I mean, it was a blanket format for the retention of any of the data. It was not specification, again, purpose specification. So for which purpose, for whom's data, and for how many period, and so on and so forth. So this judgment, of course, and the court verdict is much complicated than this, but I would like to point this out, that this purpose specification questions comes back and back again and again in every big cases before the court, and they are looked at it in a very thorough way, and the data controller under European regulations explicitly and starting from 2018, more explicitly, we'll have very stringent obligation about the fulfillment of this principle. So how to apply the purpose specification and how to be as precise as possible about the purposes of my data processing. So basically, that was it. I have another slide which only a slide for reference for you to a set of examples which was produced in an Article 29 working group's document. You will see now on the slides, and you have the link from the, I think, 51st page onwards. You have two annexes, and they have plenty of examples about purpose specification and about the compatibility assessment. As data controller, how you should. Pursue this. So I think that's it. I covered all this, the examples I had in mind. Of course, it was not very much ICANN specific, but I chose them, as I said, not instantly. And we had some preliminary discussion about the CCTLD, which now I will not start to assess. I mean, their practice about purpose specification. But we found out that what is more important is to first to specify purposes. Because if we specify the who is purposes, which will be in relation, of course, with the ICANN purposes, it has to be in relation with ICANN purposes. Then we can go further on specific application of GTLDs. Specific implication in the GTLDs or the CCTLDs contracts in terms of references. So I stop here and thank you for the opportunity again, and I'd be happy to answer the questions if you have.
Thank you very much, Peter. Appreciate this. I'm going to open it up to questions for the whole working group just shortly, and I'm going to ask a few to get it started. If we could go up to Peter's second slide, please. By the way, this is Chuck speaking. Okay, so the first question I have for you, Peter, is tell us a little bit about this modernized Convention 108, Article 5. Is that a law that applies to people in Europe? Is it a law that how does that apply to us, whether we're in Europe or not? Can you comment on that a little bit?
There is again this beeping.
Sorry about that. Terry's acting on it to get it mute
okay.
that line. So again, please keep your
phone again?
On
okay.
mute.
So as I said, there are a lot of there are multiple legislations throughout the world. Wonderful gentleman counted it. It has 110 legislation on data protection in its study. All is available and can be consulted. But I use those references and I use this text because this is what I know the best, and because this Convention 108 is as I said the only international treaty, international convention on privacy and human rights. Of course, it would be wonderful if we could have one under the UN. And all of the states could sign to it for once. I mean, in a simplified procedure, but there are not too many chances, to be very honest, in my lifetime at least, to arrive at this. But being said that, the modernized the Convention 108 is an open convention. And assessing the advantages third states can get out of it, third states started to join outside of Europe Convention 108. For now, we have three, but we have who has joined. Convention 108 outside of Europe. We have 47 member states in Europe who are members and a party to this convention. And for them, it's a binding legal text. And three out of Europe has already joined, and they are and for them they have it has a binding effect. And we are in negotiation with more and more and a rising number of countries which, for economic reasons, I'll be very open on this, and for other reasons, they are considering of joining the Convention 108. Economic reasons, because Convention 108 is based on the promotion of the free flow of information, so and the free flow of data. So basically, it among their member states, it enables the free flow of data. So basically, and to put it very very in a simple language, if you join, you can send and receive data. Without taking care about national legislation, let's put it like this. For instance, in Germany, if I'm not mistaken, the national law says that all states that has joined Convention 108 are qualified as having an adequate level of data protection, and so on and so forth. So there has a lot of reasons, political ones, geopolitical ones, and economical as well. But this is why I'm making always this reference. But and because I'm working for Council of Europe, and this is the Council of Europe instrument, but it is much, much and very widely supported by the European Union, European Commission as well. So it has really a global advocacy, and we are really in the phase of looking for more and more countries to convince them, and not only convince them, but to help them to join this convention, which can facilitate a lot of things in our very difficult world with sometimes fragmented data protection and privacy legislation.
Thank you, Peter. We have a couple hands raised. This is Chuck. Theo, are you going to follow up on the Convention 108?
No, Chuck, and this is for you for the record. I was actually
going back to that. Hold on a second. If you're not going
to
follow up on Convention 108, let me hold a little bit. Alex, are you going to talk about Convention 108, a question or a comment? Okay.
No, something else.
No, okay. So hold on. I'm going to call on you. I just wanted to wanted to have you jump in if you were going to talk about this. I think Peter answered my question. There are jurisdictions, certainly sounds like most European jurisdictions have joined this convention, so these things would apply. That doesn't mean that others can't do that. So, all right, Theo, let's go ahead and go to your question or comment.
Okay, thanks, Chuck, and thank you, Peter, for the explanation there and the examples there. And what I'm hearing is a sort of reoccurring theme that the collection of data has to have a legitimate purpose. What I'm also hearing is that the companies that are processing the data have to make sure there's an adequate level of data protection. And when I'm looking at sort of the ICANN field scope, field is maybe the best word here, my English is not my primary language, but anyways, what we are doing is we are sending the data to these registries, which could have a legitimate purpose, but then the data gets completely displayed in a public whiz. I don't see how we can have any data protection safeguards there when we just open it in public. And that sort of follows through the examples that I've been hearing. I've been hearing that in certain examples that certain companies sort of been, they actually had issues with a European law there, and apparently there was some kind of verdict there that it was not legitimate. And I'm actually wondering if we are going to proceed with this endeavor, how are we going to make sure that once we are at a stage that we are in a finalizing stage of the RDS, that we are complying with European law and all these other countries who have some kind of data protection or data privacy law? Because it feels like we're going to open a can of worms there, which is pretty big there. Thank you.
Thank you, Theo. And you're asking great questions. In fact, one of the questions you're asking is really under item 3 on our agenda as to whether or not for thin data we're currently in compliance with the with our WHOIS with data protection requirements. So we're going to get to that. Okay, we're going to talk about that. And then, of course, how we would implement all this is down the road a ways. We first of all have to come up with the requirements, and right now we're looking at possible. We're kind of heading into possible requirements with regard to data protection. So we're gonna get there. Your questions are great. Let me go to Alex. By the way, this is Chuck speaking.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Alex. I had a quick question on the first slide, the two bullets from Stephanie. I was just curious, are those a reference from, you know, a law regulation or something, or are they just statements from Stephanie? I'm just curious to know kind of the the origin of these two bullets.
Thanks, Alex. This is Chuck. Now, Stephanie is ill, so she may not be able to speak. So I'm going to propose an answer. Certainly, Stephanie, if you think you can speak, just raise your hand, but I won't put you on the spot because I know you're having problems with your voice, and that's fully understood. These are statements from Stephanie, as I understand it. Now, her statements are coming from some of the documents that we have as resources, like, for example, the Article 29 Working Party 203 opinion that she summarized. And also, you can see some of this comes from what is very closely related to what Peter presented today and presented last week. So don't worry too much about whether these are statements of fact or Stephanie's opinion. We put this slide up there mainly to kind of transition from what was talked about last week, and this whole idea of purpose and purpose limitation or broad purpose or whatever. So Stephanie has raised her hand. Let's give her a shot. Go ahead, Stephanie. Your voice sounds really weak. We can't hear you. Looks like you're off mute. Okay, Stephanie, we can't hear you. Let's go ahead. Alex, I don't think my answer was too far off, but don't worry too much about whether those are opinions or factual statement. I mean, they obviously, the first one is obviously just a statement. I think it's accurate. You know, if you interpret the need for a statement of purpose very broadly, you get different results than if you interpret it narrowly. And we're going to have to decide how narrow or how broad we will interpret these things. And in some cases, in some jurisdictions, if you look back at Stephanie's summary of Article 29, it talks about that the statement of purpose has to be very explicit. But it also has some flexibility built into it. When I read that, I particularly looked at that again this time, and let me read the purpose specification that's in Stephanie's summary of that document that we addressed a long time ago. It says, data collected only for specific, explicit, and legitimate purposes. Purpose specification determines the data to be collected, retention periods, and all other aspects of how data is processed. Must be determined prior to or not later than collection. Each separate purpose should be specified in enough detail to be able to assess whether collection of personal data complies with law and what safeguards are necessary. But as I went on in that document, I also noticed, and I'm kind of addressing, there's a section there that's on exceptions under Article 13. And there are exceptions for national security, for defense, for public security. I won't read them all. But one of the last one is the protection of the data subject or of the rights and freedoms of others. So please, as we're looking at this, I think it's clear that we're going to need to focus on the purpose of an RDS. And I have some other questions in that regard, following up on Peter's. But let me first of all go to Mark.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Mark Anderson for the record. And I first wanted to thank Peter. I found your presentation, this week and last week, very, very useful, relevant, informative. I've been participating in, the policy process for a number of years now, and, having you know, being able to benefit from your expertise and participation is a real luxury. So thank you for your time and your participation here. But I also, you know, wanted to, you know, maybe echo a little bit of what, you know, Chuck was saying about the purpose. You know, a couple months back, we spent some time deliberating on the purpose of RDS. And I think we struggled a little bit, and people started to get frustrated, and we sort of abandoned that effort. But you know, some of our more recent discussions, and certainly from what Peter has spoken to us about, I think it's very important that we take another crack at defining what the purpose of RDS is. It seems like that's going to be an important step for us to move forward with a common understanding. Because I'm sure there are many different views within this group on what the purpose of RDS is. With all the different views out there, it makes it that much harder for us to move forward, coming to a single solution. I may end on asking Peter if I could put him on the spot, if he had some advice. And I know, Peter, in your slides you provided some examples of purpose statements, but if you maybe had some advice or suggestions that would help us in our deliberations in moving towards defining the purpose of RDS. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. This is Chuck. Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much. First, I just wanted to come back very shortly in Chuck's answer or Chuck's question or comment, and it will answer others other intervention as well. So why I'm here and why I'm speaking to you about all this and how this is relates to ICANN. But first of all, maybe you are aware or maybe not, but at the Council of Europe, 50 governments, 50 states in Europe, at the Council of Ministers, published or agreed on a declaration which is setting the organization position or organization strategy towards ICANN, and they felt that human rights and the rule of law and the implementation of this very broad principles followed. The implementation of those principles have to be followed, or and if needed, assisted by the Council of Europe. So basically, this is why I'm here, because we felt that the privacy, the rights to privacy and rights to data protection, are one of the human rights which is the most affected by not the only one, but the most affected by ICANN policies. And this PDPRDS is one of the best examples for this, I think. Why I'm referring to Convention 108 all the time, because as I said, it encompasses all the internationally recognized data protection principles. It doesn't have anything which is not shared or not followed by any of the countries having 110 countries having data protection and privacy legislation. And it is not only recognized by us, because I'm saying you this, but you will hear the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Privacy will say the same thing, and others, privacy experts, will do the same thing. This is why I'm using also APAC a privacy framework as a reference and to show you the parallelism with this, because basically this is not meant for Europe. APAC is Asian Pacific, so this is basically to again put it very simplistically, it's American law and American way of dealing with privacy. But it says the same thing, and I have been working very, very hard with colleagues on Privacy Shield. I was involved in this work, and we have found all the translations we can have about EU and US legislation, because ICANN is we hear very often that ICANN is a California law-based company, so they have to follow this legislation. But all in all, and I will finish on this, if we take Convention 108 and if we read it, and if we follow the provisions and principles, we have a common minimum denominator in our hands. So this is why we think it's useful, and it's useful in a global context. And to give you a very concrete example, how to respond to the question which has been put, I think we have to read first the bylaws of the ICANN, and after we have to give it a try to suggest something which is purpose specification, and for this we can have, of course, what we have been doing, we have been doing since months, to find the possible purposes. Data can be processed under ICANN remit, but after we have to apply a kind what we call in Europe the balance test. And for this there is a methodology, and I can help you, and I'm here for this to help you out of this if once we reach there. But we have to take one by one and to apply the test taken as a legitimate purpose for ICANN mission or ICANN activities, and publicity of data is one of them. We have to use the balance for this, whether we are defending or not others' interests by hurting data subjects' rights. So that's a whole legal exercise we have to carry on, but we are here for helping you out with this.
Thank you, Peter. This is Chuck again. And going back to Mark, yes, I think you're right. We're going to have to work on a statement of purpose. A lot of people are doing that in the chat. There's some good ideas in there. And we're going to have to that's going to be a challenge. We have on the agenda today to look at an example of a purpose statement. And, of course, there are lots of others, and I think Peter provided a link where some guidelines in terms of developing purpose statements. We probably will look at that in more depth. I understand that Stephanie now has audio, so let me give Stephanie a chance to talk, if her voice will let her.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Those bullets that I think it was Alex was asking about. I'm just getting rid of my echo here. Sorry. Actually, were my summary for the purposes of the presentation. But I think it's based on having a broad look at how we have drafted data protection law in the various jurisdictions. And if you're interested in the reading on this, I would recommend Lee Bygrave, who has been advising on the transition, is also a data protection scholar, and he has a book called Data Protection Law that looks at how the various concepts in data protection have been implemented in practice. And I also looked at Greenleaf and what Greenleaf had to say about this. The purpose limitation has been there forever. It was in the OECD guidelines. It was in the original Council of Europe Convention 108. it is broadly accepted to be the fundamental step in figuring out how you manage the rights that an organization has to process data. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. It's Chuck again. I have another question with regard to purpose, and then I'm probably going to propose a conclusion to see if we can agree on it on this call and then follow up in a poll. But not so much recently, but going back a ways, there was talk about primary purposes and secondary purposes. Now, I confess that I did not or do not fully appreciate the difference between primary purposes and secondary purposes, especially with regard to some of the data protection things that Peter and Stephanie have been sharing with us. Are secondary purposes exceptions? Or what's the difference between a primary purpose and a secondary purpose with regard to this need to limit purpose and to explicitly state purpose? Let me put that to Peter first, and then if Stephanie wants to respond, and then if anybody else wants to respond.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. I think my answer is very, very simple and clear. You don't have to bother about secondary purposes. It is not you. Not the controller who has to bother about secondary purposes, but the data controller of the further data processing. So to put it very in a simple example, for example, the immigration data, the immigration authorities hasn't have to bother about whether this data will be used or will be good for law enforcement purposes, for fight against drugs, for instance. They have to be assured that this data is collected under the conditions and under the circumstances it has been prescribed by law or by other means. It is accurate. It is processed fairly. It is obtained in a lawful way, and so on and so forth. And you don't have to bother about the secondary purposes, whether if it will be used for statistical purposes 30 years later, or it will be used for I don't know. Okay, let's take the police example, the drug trafficking. It is for the police who will pursue the drug trafficking case, who will come to the immigration authority to prove that, hey, I'm here for a legitimate purpose. Please give me your data, and that's it. You don't the immigration the first grade or first level data control doesn't have to bother about the second, third, and further use of its data, period, for me.
So, Peter, this is Chuck again. Let me pursue this a little bit further. So in our case, in the ICANN world, with an RDS, I think most of us would, or probably all of us would agree that a purpose of an RDS is to facilitate operational purposes for domain names. Now, and of course, as we all know, it all started, for those technical reasons, if there were problems in terms of resolution and so forth, so that people could be contacted. Now, let's add in now trademark protection. How do we address that in our purpose statement? Do we have a general statement of rights protection that part of our purpose is to provide means to protect people's rights with regard to domain names? let's bring it home to where we live in the ICANN world. Can you comment on that?
Yes, of course, and I have very simple answer to those questions as well, I think. But as you know, I'm a more cautious. I have a more cautious approach, and don't want to jump into this already. I think we have to specify what those purposes means in real life. I mean, the purpose you refer to, the maintenance of the domain name system. What does it entail? What are the actions, the actual actions you need to do to pursue this, and you, after this, you have to render the data processing to those activities. And for instance, there are secondary or third purposes or use of this data, but you have to decide what will be your. I mean, I can have to decide what will be the first level, whether it will be have the anxiousness about the trademark regulation or the implementation of the trademark regulation or law enforcement or other issues. But for this, as I tried to point it out, that you have also to take account and you also have to balance one more thing, that if you say that this is my first level of purposes, this is why I am processing personal data, that you have to bear in mind that you are accountable also for these purposes, that you will have to be to show all the and to stand for all the requirements data processing needs according to privacy principles, that you have to process it fairly, adequately, in an up-to-date manner. You have to listen to the claims. You have to change data if it's necessary. You have to replace it. You have to keep it, and so on and so forth. Do you want this? And of course, it is very complicated because we are now in an international, or let's say, globalized context. ICANN is not a data controller under one jurisdiction. I would say like this, because it's pursuing its activities worldwide. So in a country, in a national legislation, that would be so much easier, because it would have been some law which would prescribe it, and it would be the parliament who will vote this legislation and will agree on that, and it will give the necessary legitimacy for this legislation, because the parliament will vote it and it will be promulgated and so on and so forth. But for ICANN, it has to define itself whether what would be the first level or first grade purposes for which it will process personal data and decide it. I will, and if we draw a line that here are our purposes before that, I think we should forget about all the rest.
So, Peter, this is Chuck. are you saying that our purpose statement for an RDS needs to be specific enough to cover not only what we might call a primary purpose, but any lower level purposes?
Well, if we want to be on the safe side, I would say yes.
Okay. Thank you. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I think this whole issue of primary, secondary, tertiary purposes, there are differences in the different data protection laws around the world, so we express it differently. Certainly in Canada, with the first Privacy Act, and I believe you had the same problems in the United States with the Privacy Act down there, one of the expressions that crept in was consistent use, because we use the expression agencies can gather information for the pursuit of, let's take the education authority for the pursuit of providing education or for a use consistent with that purpose. Well, the problem became that just about anything became a consistent use. So successive generations of law drafters tried to refine this down a bit. And you can do it either in the purpose clause or you can find other other clauses in your legislation where you define it down. It's done differently in our provincial legislation. So you have to look at the laws in their totality to figure out how this is grappled with. If I could give you just one example that will show you why we really have to deal with that problem. I recall in the 90s when we were doing some work on training manuals for the new law that was coming in, and the new standard actually before the law, we looked at a daycare in the province of Quebec that already had data protection law. And they were, and this may appeal more to the ladies in this group than to the men. I don't know how many of you have young kids. But who wants to hand over to a daycare all the details of your pregnancy, all the details of the birth, whether it was a forceps or not, whether there was a cord around the child's neck? You do have to ask yourself, okay, why does a daycare need this information? Well, it matched their purpose, you know, gathering health data to ensure the happiness of the child at the daycare. I mean, you have to buckle the purpose limitation clause down as tightly and specifically as you can. Now, in the case of ICANN, obviously the records show that at the time ICANN was formed, there was a very real issue with what was happening with trademark and cyber squatting and all of the, you know, ills that largely the solutions have been found for some of these, although I'm not saying there isn't an ongoing problem. So the IPC and WIPO certainly made recommendations to the Commerce Department that were listened to, and who is made the data available, and the RAAs have continued to do so. The question is whether that should be reevaluated in the case of risk nowadays and the various different technological ways we could achieve data disclosure. It doesn't have to be in the who is. The other question is ICANN in its current state set up to be the instrument through which trademark and copyright law are enforced? You know, possibly not. That doesn't mean that you can't use data, but the question is, how much data do you gather specifically for that purpose? So I hope that helps, and I'm going to quit.
Thank you, Stephanie. This is Chuck again. So I'm going to try to bring some closure, not very much, but some closure to what we've talked about today and last week. First of all, I'm going to ask a question. Mark Anderson kind of hit on this in his comments, but are we in agreement as a working group that one of our one of the tasks that we need to complete in the near term is to agree on a purpose statement for an RDS. Is there, and let me phrase it differently. I see a green check mark. Is there anybody that disagrees with that conclusion? And the conclusion, again, is that we as a working group need to agree on a purpose statement for the RDS. Is there any disagreement in that? And you're agreeing, is that right, Fabricio and Andrew? If anybody is disagreeing, put a red X in there. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that that's a conclusion we can test with a poll. Okay, I'm not seeing any. And, of course, Daniel, you can speak up if you disagree.
Daniel, real quick. Can I say something?
Sure, go ahead, Daniel.
Previously, I recall before the Helsinki meeting, it was after the Helsinki meeting, when we went to start drafting the problem statement. Does the problem statement still apply? Or will it be fresh?
Daniel, you're breaking up quite a bit. I'm having trouble understanding you. Did someone else understand it better than I did? Please speak up if you did. Let me ask you, are you in agreement that we need to develop a purpose statement for the RDS, Daniel? Could you answer that question, yes or no? Or
before I make a statement that I agree or not, I would like to find out about the previous problem statement that we came up after the Helsinki meeting. Does the statement of Helsinki, is this still valid? If it isn't valid, then I agree that we should come up with a new problem statement.
Okay, so you're talking about a problem statement. Lisa, go ahead and respond.
Chuck, I think Daniel is only on the telephone. There has been a fair number of comments in chat that we did have a draft purpose statement. And that draft purpose statement is still in our working document. It's in Section 2.3, and it will be the next thing that we address when we get back to the charter question on purpose. The problem statement has also been published and is still a problem statement for this working group to address. But I think, Daniel, what you meant to ask about was the purpose statement.
Okay. Yeah. Daniel, for the record, then I agree there is need to come up with one. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate that. Okay, so that conclusion that we need to agree on a purpose statement for an RDS is one we'll test in a poll this week. So, and certainly we want all of you to participate so we get more data, but also obviously to give opportunity for those who are not on the call to participate. The second thing, I want to jump very quickly. We don't have very much time because there's another item we need to take care of. I want to jump very quickly to item three of the agenda, and there's a question there, and I'm suspecting we might already have the answer, and I'm going to ask you to respond. So please remove your green check marks. I don't think there were any X's, so for now, if you haven't done that. Question 4.1 says, for thin data, and we're only talking about thin data right now, do existing GTLD registration directory services policies sufficiently address compliance with applicable data protection, privacy, and free speech laws about purpose? If not, what requirements might those laws place on RDS policies? I'm going to just focus on the first part of the question. It seems to me that we've come to a point where we recognize that the existing WHOIS does not address compliance with applicable data protection, privacy, and free speech laws about purpose. We don't really have, an agreed-to purpose. We all have our own opinions what the purpose is. we've started work on that. But am I correct in concluding that the answer to that question in 4.1, and I don't know if we can we bring that up there, Lisa or Marika, thank you. So look at that question at the top, okay? Can we agree that the answer is no? They don't sufficiently address compliance with applicable data protection law, even though data protection law varies by jurisdiction, we know that, but certainly there's some areas where it does not meet the protections, if for no other reason that we don't have a good purpose statement. Is there any disagreement with that? I see some green check marks. If you disagree with that statement, put a red X in there, or in case of Daniel, just tell us you disagree. So,
what did you say,
Daniel?
I agree with the statement.
Thank you. Okay. So, in other words, the answer is no to that first question. So that would be a second question to test in a poll. And again, we want everybody to participate in the poll, whether you're on this call or not. But especially, it gives an opportunity for those who are not on the call. Okay, so those are two conclusions that we're going to test in a poll this week, and you'll have a short turnaround so that we can keep moving. But there's one other thing I want to cover before we close today, and that is I have proposed to the leadership team, and I may have said something about it on the full list, I don't remember, that we form a small group. As everyone, I think, knows by now, and we talked about it last week, Peter talked about it, we're going to have a cross-community session in Copenhagen with European data commissioners. Thanks, Peter, and especially for his work and Stephanie's work for arranging for this and coordinating with the data protection commissioners. And arranging them to participate. It's my view that we need to have some very good questions for those data commissioners, whether they're asked in that session or in our working group session on Wednesday afternoon, with I think at least one of them can be there most of the time on our meeting on Wednesday afternoon there. It seems to me it would be very helpful if we had a group of volunteers, maybe one or two from each, one, not more than two, one's okay, from different groups within our working group, those that have different interests. So we want privacy interests represented. We want rights protection interests represented. We want law enforcement represented. The task of that group would be to develop a list of questions for the data commissioners that would be very helpful for us to get responses on in Copenhagen. Now, the idea would be this small group would come up with some proposed questions, agreeing together among yourselves on the questions, and then submitting those to the working group so that the working group can agree or not agree on the questions. So what I'd like to ask between now and certainly by next Monday, for volunteers to participate in that group. And it'll be a short effort. You're probably going to have a week or so to give something to the full working group so that we get it all done before the Copenhagen meeting. But please talk to your groups to see who you would like to represent you and submit that on the list this week. And you can do it by constituency or stakeholder group. You can do it by interest area. The point is, don't want the group to be too big because it's going to be a short order task. So, and anybody that would like to participate can, but let's keep it small and not have a lot of duplicates. You can coordinate among yourselves. For example, if you're in the IPC as a person who would represent all of you, you can coordinate among the NCSG or whatever, however you want to do it. Law enforcement people, you can coordinate among yourselves, GAC people. If you would do that, please, that'll be an action item. So that between now and Monday, we would like a volunteer from each interest area at least that will work together probably the following week in coming up with some questions. So our meeting 2 weeks from today, the working group could consider the questions that you come up with. Shouldn't be a huge task, but it's one that it'll be helpful if there's some thought put into it. So that's an action item for everybody. Looking at the agenda, so we have some action items. And the decision points that will be polled. Our meeting next week is on at the alternate time. And we're going to continue this direction we're going right now and talk about the poll on purpose and we're going to have to, the leadership team is going to have to work through exactly how to proceed. We'll get back to you on that. But we will be continuing this in our meeting next week and hopefully finalizing the group of volunteers. So please do that before that meeting and do it by Monday. Identify the volunteers from your groups. Make sure you have somebody on it that will represent all of you. And that group will have about a week-long task to just email and text and maybe even have a call that staff will facilitate so that we can come up with some good questions for Copenhagen for the data commissioners to answer some of the struggles we're having and make sure we have a good understanding of the requirements, certainly of Europe, but I think it goes beyond that, as Peter has pointed out several times. Is there anything? Sorry to talk so much on that, but hopefully we got a little bit of closure in this call. Is there anything I have missed, something else we need to do on this call? And Marika, I did see some of your private comments. I just haven't had time to respond. But you're right. We'll need to look at ICANN's mission. I think it was Peter that said we should look, or somebody said look at the ICANN bylaws and so forth. Absolutely true. We'll do that as we begin to proceed on this. Not seeing any other items that we need to cover. Let me say thanks. Good discussion. Keep it up on the list. And we will meet again at our alternate time next week. At this point, I'll adjourn the meeting and the recording can stop. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Raymond, the operator, if you could please stop the recording. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining.